I want to ask you some questions about yourself. I know you're from Kentucky, and obviously you write semi-autobiographically because your settings are Kentucky. I guess they were the same settings for the stories in Shiloh and other stories.
Right.
So where in Kentucky are you from?
A town called Mayfield, Kentucky. Mayfield.
Okay.
Which is not far from Paducah, which is the big city on the Illinois border.
Mm-hmm.
And the novel is set in the fictitious town of Hopewell, which is not exactly Mayfield. I dislocated it somewhat, made it somewhere in western Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
I went to the University of Kentucky and then the University of Connecticut.
Straddled the Mason-Dixon line. Then.
Oh, yeah.
What did you study?
English.
Yeah. What in your earliest beginnings when you were growing up in Hopewell, Kentucky?
Mayfield.
Might have given some inkling that you would someday become a writer.
Well, it was a very isolated place, and I didn't have many friends because I lived in the country. And so my influences were things from the outside, like radio and music and movies. And the books I read were, as a child, were primarily children's mystery series books. And I started out wanting to write one of those.
Another Nancy Drew.
Yeah,
yeah. Did you come from a family of readers?
No. I come from a farm family, and there was a library in town, but I wasn't encouraged. Well, I was encouraged to read, but there wasn't much guidance about what to read.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any writing as a child?
I did when I was an adolescent. I tried to write Nancy Drew style stories.
Oh, you did go ahead and try to write them.
And I didn't write much in high school, but I wrote short stories in college that are more or less the kind of story I ended up writing much later.
Your collection of stories, Shiloh, these were the early stories that you wrote, obviously. Where did they appear? Where were they first published?
The New Yorker, primarily.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlantic.
How did you feel when you made your first sale to the New Yorker?
Oh, that was ecstatic. It was wonderful.
It's a big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you live now?
Near Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Why did you decide to relocate?
Oh, I've been in the Northeast ever since I got out of college. I lived in a number of places. Been trying to get back to Kentucky, though.
Why Allentown?
Oh, my husband works there.
Mm-hmm. After you got out of college, what did you do? When did you get out of college?
1962.
Uh-huh.
Went to graduate school, University of Connecticut.
Then what did you do?
I taught journalism part-time for a number of years, and when I lost my job, I started writing fiction all the time.
Mm-hmm. Where did you teach?
At a small college in Pennsylvania.
Which one?
Mansfield State College.
Mm-hmm. Journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Did you said you studied English.
I had a minor in journalism. Yeah. I haven't done real newspaper work or...
It's my theory that people in journalism, such as myself, generally don't make very good fiction writers. There are some exceptions. I think Hemingway did some journalism. William Kennedy won the Pulitzer Prize as a journalist, or was a journalist. But I have a feeling that most people who involve themselves in writing fiction probably approach it through English rather than journalism. Don't you?
Yeah, I think for the most part. I think journalism's been a big influence on me, though. I think a lot of the new journalists during the early 70s influenced my writing. And people like Lillian Ross, who wrote for Talk of the Town, or who writes for Talk of the Town, I should say, and E.B. White and Hemingway, people with very spare styles, I think, affected me.
That's how journalism has helped you.
Yeah, I think so. Not because I've been a newspaper reporter.
Yeah. Newspaper writing is so, and wire service writing is so bad, and so filled with cliches.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a newspaper, and I see writing that is not anywhere near the way people talk. You know, attribution is always mm-hmm. at the end of the sentence, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And these terrible, horrible cliches and the use of words that are not really appropriate anymore, like slay. I mean, the woman was found slain.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like going out fighting dragons or something. Like, slay a dragon, you know.
Yeah.
And it just, as I pick up a newspaper and I look at the wire stuff, I just wonder, God, you know, journalism, people in college are teaching old-time writing techniques to people studying journalism, and something should be done about it. You know, I studied journalism and broadcasting in college, and that's the way they taught us. And but that's not the way you should write. You're not the way you should write for a newspaper, for a magazine, or certainly not for broadcasting. Because broadcasters are supposed to write the way people talk.
Mm-hmm.
But people are teaching this old-fashioned, convoluted style of writing for print and journalism, and I hope.
I think they figure it's safe. It may be a lot harder to get closer to the realities, more subtle, and not everybody's equipped to do it. So they end up teaching formulas.
Mm-hmm. You've been away from Kentucky for a long time, then, haven't you?
Yeah. I go back a lot, though, which means that I can maintain my connection and know something about my material.
Well, what happens when you go back? You must have some notoriety back in the hometown.
No, I don't think I'm very well known back there.
No?
Well, maybe it's because I don't know many people there. I really don't know. I'm very close to my family, so I spend time there because of them. And I'm interested in the region. I've been away a long time, so I don't have many close friends there.
Well, you know what Faulkner did to Asheville?
Wolf.
Wolf.
Yeah.
And so where a writer is from usually carries some weight back in his hometown.
Yeah, probably. I can't remember the details of his circumstances. Nowadays, writers are so spread around the country that their affiliation with the region is much more significant now. Not all writers are in New York right now. They're spread around, usually teaching in some writing program.
Tell me about In Country and how you started writing the book, how you got the idea.
It didn't start with an idea. I didn't sit down and tell myself I was going to write a novel about Vietnam. I didn't really know it was about Vietnam until I took my characters through a number of different adventures and directions and discovered that Vietnam was in their background, and it was a subject I had to dig into and find out about. And it got more and more compelling as I went along, and I began to realize that this is the way it is for America, that we have this national experience in our backgrounds that we've tried to repress for the last several years, and now it's coming out again, and it won't go away. So it when I began to discover the subject, then it carried me along, and I got into it, even though I really didn't have any personal experience or direct connection to the issues in the book.
You had to do a little research into Agent Orange.
Yes, and veterans' experiences and their accounts of what it was like to be in Vietnam and their accounts of their homecoming and their readjustment difficulties. I read quite a bit about those subjects.
One good thing, I think, about writing is that most writers don't try to tell you all the answers. They don't try to draw specific conclusions for you, and I'm not sure you did in country with regard to the United States involvement in Vietnam, but did you, as a person, after doing the research and after doing the writing for in country, reach any conclusions about the U.S. experience in Vietnam?
Well, I think the experience of the characters in the book kind of carries the emotional weight of what I felt was the aftermath and the fallout from the war. And I guess I felt that writing it was a way of trying not to forget about it and trying not to romanticize it so that we find ourselves in a similar situation again and forget that how horrible it was. So I think it was overwhelming to me that the war had these reverberating effects, and not just on certain people, 58,000 or so who died in Vietnam, but on multiply that by all their families and add in all those who did come back and add their families, and not just the United States either. And it's just a tremendous complex emotional experience, and that's the way I concluded, or that's the way I approached it, and I didn't come up with 10 points on what to do about El Salvador. Fiction is not didactic, I think. It enlarges your sympathy and makes you feel something that you might not have experienced directly.
It's interesting that a lot of good literature is beginning to come out of the Vietnam War after a long period where nothing was written about it, but that may be because people involved in the war, in some respect, whether directly, people, soldiers who'd been over there, people like yourself who in effect came of age during the war, now have a better perspective and are starting to write about it.
Yes, it takes a while to start to come to grips with something like this. I'm not surprised that it lay dormant for a while. And with the Civil War, it took 100 years or so for the writers to really get going on that subject. And, you know, I think the fact that we're beginning right now to start to write a lot about it, and for it to be large in our imaginations is a good sign. It is our major subject, our major literary subject for our generation, for my generation.
There seems to be more ambivalence in the way things are being written about that war than World War II. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was too young to do too much reading right after World War II, but as things came out, it seemed to me that they were more gung-ho. There were a few excellent books, Naked and the Dead, for example, and From Here to Eternity, and The Long March by William Styron. That's actually a post-World War II book. But looking back, I can't think that there were too many really sensitive books about... Well, you know, when you think of all the books that have been written about World War II, I can't mm-hmm. think of too many really sensitive works of fiction that outside of the
something that would compare to All Quiet on the Western Front, going back to World War I, which has a devastating account of the suffering of that war. Well, the aftermath of the Vietnam War was different. America has changed so much. It's much more sophisticated and less innocent, and in effect, we lost our innocence with this war. So it is a lot less simple in the way we've approached it.
Do you always have a writing project? Or sometimes do you take just a break?
I'm taking a break right now, but I'm going to return to short stories as soon as I can.
Your first love?
I think so, although the novel was really dominated my time for a while, and I loved it. I loved doing it. It's just hard to think of launching right into another one right away.
Who are some of the people that you like to read these days?
Oh, I read a lot of contemporary short story writers and novelists. Just, let's see. I like Ann Tyler a lot, Ann Beattie, Raymond Carver, Garrison Keillor.
He was the toughest interview I ever had. I talked to him last week, and have you ever talked to him?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he has. Type of person, you never know when he's quite finished saying something. Is it wrong? Yeah, he would come to a rest at the end of a sentence, and I would come in with another question, then he would start talking again. So after a while, I began to realize I was never quite certain when he was going to be finished. So I wouldn't come in right away, and then sure enough, he wouldn't start again either. Mm-hmm. So I mean, there were like 20-second gaps I was waiting for him to speak.
They talk very slowly in Minnesota.
If they talk at all.
Yeah.
Did you read the... William Least Heat Moon's Blue Highway?
Yeah, I did.
He was telling me that he had no problem going through the South, going through the West, but the part of his book as he crossed through Minnesota is very short.
Mm.
He said, because nobody would talk to
right.
him there.
I remember that.
Well, it's interesting that you mention those names, too, because young writers such as yourself are obviously motivated more by their peers than they are older, established writers. This subject has come up a number of times when I talk to writers. It's almost every day. And people are influenced by their peers, people who write today. Raymond Carver comes up all, Jane mm-hmm. Ann Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
These names pop up all the time. Nobody mentions Bellow anymore, but or established, or Styron. I mean, these are established writers of another generation,
mm-hmm.
still writing, of course, but they don't seem to carry the weight as with the younger writers as the peers of the younger writers. Because I have a feeling they learn from each other and they read each other's work and they vibe with each other. Is that your feeling?
I don't have any really conscious feelings about that or answers to that. I don't know.
You didn't mention Bellow.
No.
As one of the people you read or Styron.
Nabokov is one of my favorites. But... I think there's a sense of newness and change that it's very dynamic to be reading somebody current. It may all be different by next week.
But Carver is one heck of a writer. I just love his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like living around Allentown, Pennsylvania?
Oh, it's nice. I don't really have much connection to Pennsylvania as a home. It's I'm very much an outsider, and Kentucky's the only place I...
They mine coal in Pennsylvania.
Well, you know, it's different when you didn't grow up there and you don't know the language. Even though the essentials are the same, they're farmers, miners, so on. The surfaces are different, and therefore... You don't get through those things.
Mm. Are you planning any Pennsylvania motifs for some of your stories?
No, I've never been motivated to write about the Northeast.
Mm. Well,
I guess I just don't feel
like
comfortable.
Minnesota, is that right?
Well, I don't feel comfortable here. And all my friends are scattered around, and so I don't know where I belong, really.
Mm. What does your husband do?
He's an editor at Rodale Press.
They do a lot of health... magazines, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Well, Bobby Ann Mason, are you referred to as Bobby Ann?
A lot of the time.
Or just Bobby?
My friends always call me Bobby.
And some people insist on getting that middle name in there when they're from the South. You never know.
Yeah.
It's got to be Bobby Ann or
Bobby
Billy Bob,
Bobby
Billy Jean.
That was my childhood name,
yeah.
Actually.
Well, I thought In Country was a wonderful book,
and I
also enjoyed Shiloh, and looking forward to anything else you have. I hope you get back to Pennsylvania and start sitting at the typewriter and getting back to work.
I'll try to do that.
Yeah. And it was certainly nice having you in to talk to me. Hope it wasn't too much of an ordeal.
Oh, no.
And that you enjoy your... How long are you going to be in New York?
Oh, just today. I came yesterday.
Then you're going to drive back to... Drive?
No, I'm going on a book tour.
Oh. Hmm. Well, what's next?
Pittsburgh.
This your first book tour?
First official book tour, yeah.
This your first official city of the tour?
Yeah.
How's it been so far?
Pretty good. I'll do all right, I think.
Well, you seem relaxed.
If I get enough sleep, I'll be all right.
Yeah. Oh, some people love it, and other people
And some people
hate it.
Yeah,
but everybody wants to sell his book. And, you know, publishers aren't that helpful sometimes. I hear more and more complaints about from authors about they didn't do anything for me this year.
I think Harper Row's treating me pretty well.
It's not too bad. But I'm talking to one young writer who he published a book. It was with Delacorte. And he was so frustrated with the lack of promotion and publicity for the book that he took $10,000 out of his own bank account and hired a publicist and arranged his own tour and things like that. And he was not very happy about it. I talked to the publisher about it later, and the publisher said, well, they didn't think any amount of publicity would help. Bobby Ann Mason, thank you.
Yeah, well, you're welcome.